black eye. Parshat Ki Tisa is a black eye on Klal Yisrael. Cheta Egel. Cheta Egel is in our parsha. The breaking of the Luchos. There's a lot. It's a lot to unpack within this parsha, within this narrative, this discussion. There are many other mitzvos that are discussed here. The Kiyor, the final touch of the Mishkan are mentioned. You have the Kiyor, the Ketores, the ingredients for the Ketores, the Mitzvah Shabbos, the architect for the Mishkan, Bitzalel, the Ohaliyav are mentioned here. There's so much. We're going to try to unpack it with five Divrei Torah to go, all about the Egel. Let's begin. Vayar Ha'am, Ki Boshesh Moshe L'Avredes Minahar. Actually, I'll begin here with the story before we get into the Pesukim here. I was a counselor at Camp Morashah for many years, and the Minhag, I was a counselor for a program called Machon. Machon is actually one of my campers listens to this year recorded. So if he's listening, let me know that you heard this one. So the Minhag was, the Machon kids were going to 12th grade, CITs, boys and girls. And I was a counselor for that program. And the Minhag was, they would go on a raid. They'd go on a, they'd do some type of prank to the camp. That was a Minhag every year. My kids were not so creative. They didn't know what to do. So I decided that I would go with them. They wanted to do something in the middle of the night, 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I decided that instead of them walking a very far trek to boys' campus to do whatever they're going to do, I drove them to the prank. I stayed in the car. And then I was like the getaway driver. I drove them back, went to sleep, woke up the next morning. The next morning, we're davening Shacharis. I still remember this as if it was yesterday. Rabbi Abraham Rohaftig was Zatzal. He was the camp director. And Rabbi Kroll, the principal in SAR, was the program director of our program. He was davening with us. And I heard him say, Rabbi Rohaftig got on the walkie-talkie back in the day. That's what they used. There was no cell phone service in the camp. And he said to Rabbi Kroll on the walkie-talkie, was Markowitz there? I heard that Markowitz drove them. And like, this was literally in the middle of davening. I don't know if it was like Shmon Esrei, Tachanun. Everyone stopped davening. And Rabbi Rohaftig said, who my family has a very close relationship with, said, if Markowitz was there, tell him he's fired. That's it. Done. Toast. Pack his bags. Rabbi Kroll responded to him, such a sharp response. He said he was Aaron at Cheta Egel. Mic drop. Done. He saved my job. My high. Vayar ha'am ki boshesh Moshe l'avredes minahar. The Jewish people see that Moshe is not coming down. He's tarrying. There was a miscount. All these different, you know, we have all these different interpretations. Vayikahel ha'am al Aaron. They all go to Aaron and say, what should we do? What should we do? So Aaron says, let's gather gold together. Kuma seilanu Elohim asher yelchu lefaneinu. Make us a God that will go before us. Ki Moshe ha'ish, who took us out of Egypt, we don't know where he is. And Aaron then says, let's gather money. Let's collect gold and silver and precious metals. And let's collect them and we'll see what we can do. Asks the Rush. The Rush is usually known for his great halachic work, called the Rush. Found at the back of nearly every single Masechet in Shas. But he also has a Perush to the Torah, not so often quoted. And he asks here a very sharp question. Why did Aaron immediately go to, oh, I agree with you. Isn't the job of a leader to go against the grain? Isn't the job of a leader not necessarily to agree or follow the constituents, but to do what is right? Why didn't Aaron say, I'll be your leader? Isn't that what they wanted? I'll be your leader. Moshe died, I'll be your leader. Or Kalev, Yehoshua. There are other people that rose to prominence even in the short time since they left Egypt that could have taken over and replaced Moshe as the leader. Why didn't Aaron give that as an option? And that would have been such an easier transition. The transition would have been, oh, Moshe's back? Okay, Aaron's stepping down. Aaron, we know, had no ego. Ask the Rush, why was this the way he did it? Aaron l'shem shamayim niskavim. He writes that Aaron did this l'shem shamayim. He was acting for the sake of heaven. Amar imani omer lahem kalev or nachshon. If I say that kalev or nachshon should be the rosh, should be the leader, when Moshe comes down, there's going to be fighting. Why? Some people are going to say, Nachshon's our guy. We gave up on Moshe, or we wanted Nachshon all along, or we wanted Kalev all along. Right? We see when transitions of powers happen, sometimes emotions can get inflamed, tensions can rise, and things can happen. And not only was that, he was concerned about Moshe's feelings. How is Moshe going to feel that already after 6 hours, 12 hours, a calendaric mistake, immediately they jump to another person as a leader? So Aaron's job at this moment, he felt, was not to make a golden calf to worship idols, but he was stalling. He was stalling, and he didn't do it in the simplest manner, which made the most sense, because he was compassionate and thoughtful and sensitive to Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's ultimately what his motivation was, what his plan was. That's why he wasn't punished as severely as everybody else, or maybe not even at all. What he didn't expect was, you know, when we fundraise, how long does it take to fundraise? A long time. This fundraising took place in a matter of moments. That he did not expect. He didn't expect everybody to immediately, for there to be an outpouring of matchers and donors, and he didn't expect them. But he did this in an extremely sensitive way to think about his brother during this time. That is thought number one.
Rabbi.
Yes, Mendy.
Okay, so at this point in time, did they have the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh already? Of knowing, you know, counting off every month and knowing when Rosh Chodesh was?
They should have, yes. Okay. That mitzvah was given to them.
How could they make
50 days earlier, approximately? Yeah.
How could they make a calendar mistake, number one? And number two, the first thing if yeah, I was...
They did have that mitzvah. Mendy is saying is it shouldn't be on the dates.
And why did Aaron just say that? Say you're making a mistake, you're off by a day instead of this other things with the gold and stuff. You're off. Man, you didn't count right. That's a great question.
I'm not sure. Maybe Aaron himself wasn't sure. Sometimes when you have if 3,000, 10,000, 15,000 people come to you and say you made a mistake in the cheshbon, but they're really wrong, you're going to start doubting yourself. You're going to have self-doubt. So it could be at a very real level. I don't know. I haven't seen this inside. This is just my conjecture that Aaron maybe felt that he was wrong. Maybe my count was wrong. I was off. You know, you count Sefiras HaOmer. Being the rabbi, there's a lot of pressure to know exactly what date it is every single day. Even if I don't miss a day and I'm still counting with a bracha, sometimes you forget, right? And it could be you turn to the guy next to you and you're like, what day is it? How much confidence do you have in them? Hopefully a lot. But let's say it's Sefiras HaOmer and your whole family says, no, it's 22. Your heart of heart, you feel it's 20. You feel it's 21, 23. But if many people are telling you it's that day, you're going to follow them, where your convictions are going to be overwhelmed by the amount of people against you. So I think that's something to factor in to the situation over here, whereas Aaron might have felt they're making a mistake, but how confident can you be when thousands of people are telling you otherwise?
So Rabbi, the Satan was Ma'arer. So the Satan was involved.
The Satan was involved, yeah. So the Satan was involved as well. Yeah, amazing. Amazing. Let's go on.
But Rabbi, one last point. One last point. I understand what Aaron did, but what you did at Camp Morasha only seems to have facilitated their malfeasance. So I don't think you have to respond right now. I'm just kidding.
So I was Aaron. I was not stalling them, but I was making them safer. That was the vort. I was ensuring their safety. Otherwise, they would have gone anyway. So at least they were doing it in a safe manner. At least that's what I like to tell myself. That's what I tell myself. Okay, so let's go on. Vayifen vayered Moshe minahar. Moshe now is told what happened, that Hashem tells him, we'll get back to this in a moment. Hashem tells him the people are, you know, worshiping the calf and dancing around it. Vayered Moshe minahar, ushnei luchos ha'edus biyado. He's holding the two luchos in his hands, the tablets of testimony. And now the Torah takes a pause. Moshe's running down the mountain in anger, in haste. Hashem says, look what they're doing. They are dancing with the ego. They are worshiping idols. And the Torah pauses. How beautiful are these luchos? How miraculous are the luchos? No matter what side you saw them on, you saw them from the right side. The way the words and the letters were engraved on them. Luchos ma'aseh elokim. They were written and engraved by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, by the Ribono Shel Olam. Va'mechtav mechtav elokim hu choras aluchos. Why is this the point? They're about to be broken and shattered into pieces. Why now does the Torah say, oh, by the way, so beautiful. You had to see them. You're never going to, but they were so beautiful, miraculous, pristine. Whoa, ma'ase elokim. What's the message here that the Torah is telling us that right now they're telling? They could have told us this before or even afterwards. This could have been a footnote, maybe in Sefer Devarim. So it says a Shem Atov, Rabbi Bernard Weinberger, something really, really beautiful. And a very simple idea that the luchos were about to be destroyed. The moment before you lose something is when you appreciate it the most. Or the moment after you lose it, to be honest, is the moment that you appreciate it the most. If only you had one more moment with that, you know, with your father. If only you had one more moment in that position, right? What could you have done? You had 5 more minutes. If I would have known the last time I would have been in Eretz Yisrael, was the last time I was there, I would have spent more time at the Kotel. I would have spent more time davening. I would have. We only appreciate something when it's gone. So the Torah is telling us right before the Luchos Rishonos are gone forever, shattered into history, the Torah tells us its beauty, its depth, to remind us of this very, very important idea. Let's continue on. Vayhi kasher karav. Again, these are the next psukim. Vayhi kasher karav elamachane. Vayaras ha'egel umecholos. Vayichar af Moshe. Vayashlech miyado. Or miyadav esaluchos veishaber usam tachasahar. Moshe goes down the mountain. He sees the egel. He sees the dancing. Moshe gets angry. And Vayashlech miyado, Rashi understands, he throws the luchos and he breaks the luchos at the foot of the mountain.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Did Hashem not tell him before he even went down? That, in other words, was he surprised when he saw the eagle, or did Hashem warn him?
Jules, great, we're on the same page. This is exactly my question over here. At the top of the mountain, when Moshe is studying with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, he is writing the Torah, whatever he is doing up there, Hashem says to him, your people are worshiping a calf. They are dancing with the calf. They are doing terrible things. You need to punish them. And Moshe has a whole encounter, an exchange with the Kadosh Baruch Hu before he comes down. Ask the Tolna Rebbe, the current Tolna Rebbe, Rav Yitzchak Menachem Weinberg, why did Moshe break the luchos at the foot of the mountain? This is the Ribono Shel Olam. God doesn't lie. God tells the truth. God told them they're worshiping idols. Why did he destroy the idols on top of, destroy the luchos, sorry, on top of the mountain when God told him that right away? Why did he wait to go down to break the luchos? Or why did he break the luchos with him to begin with? Because well, maybe, tell me, why need to wait?
Rabbi Markowitz, maybe he decided that he wanted to have them broken in so that Bnei Israel could see them, as opposed to not seeing them up the mountain and realize what they have done.
Very nice idea. That's very nice, right? They should see what they were going to lose, right? Very nice. I like that, Linda. That's not what I was going to say. Rabbi, told the Rebbe, use a different answer. That's very nice. It's a, I think pedagogically, that's a very beautiful idea, that it's important to sometimes show this is what you could have earned. You could have gotten this, but you didn't. Right? That's a thing, that's an important lesson sometimes. Rabbi, told the Rebbe, Amilti, go ahead.
I'd like to disagree on that. I think if an adult is angry and then throws things, or sometimes a kid when they're angry, you tell them not to do something, they'll take something and they'll throw it. They'll throw it. I think that's a sign of immaturity a little bit.
Of weakness.
That's yeah. Not the right way to bring people up. It's not the right way to act. It's a sign that you're losing control. So throwing things and smashing things when you're angry is not a good thing as far as I'm concerned. Not that maybe Bnei Yisrael didn't deserve some sort of rebuke, but I don't think throwing things is a sign of maturity.
Great. So that, by the way, leads us to the next point, which is the Rashbam. We'll do these two together then. The Rashbam writes that he didn't throw them. The Rashbam writes they fell out of his hands.
That's different. Yeah.
The Rashbam writes that they were so heavy that an average person couldn't carry them on his own. They're only being carried in a miraculous manner. Hashem allowed him to carry them. But when he got down to the bottom of the mountain and he saw this, Moshe like got weak. Weak at the knees. He couldn't do it. Like, oh my God, this is what my people are doing. And he dropped it. The Tolna Rebbe writes over here, another, I think, important lesson. Pedagogically, what Linda said might be true sometimes. It's not always. You have to be careful. I would have gotten you this Nintendo Switch. I would have gotten you this car. Look, it's right outside. Wave goodbye to it. That sometimes that might be too harsh, and sometimes that might be the right tone. It really depends. The Tolna Rebbe says, even if a Kaddish Baruch Hu tells you that your children are doing something wrong, you can't give them a consequence, punish them, unless you see it yourself. You have to see it. You have to see them doing it. Otherwise, it's very hard, or it might be a poor idea for a parent to go ahead and give consequences or act towards their children based on something they did not see themselves. And that's the Tolna Rebbe's idea over here. There's a very beautiful idea that we.
But he didn't have to. Hashem told him he didn't have to see it.
So even a Kaddish Baruch Hu, you need to see it for yourself. Eino Doma, the Gemara writes, Shmiya L'Re'iya. Right? It's one thing hearing something. It's another thing seeing it for yourself. And there's a different way. Sometimes, very often this happens. In the car. Oh, he hit me. She hit me. It doesn't mean you don't act and move the kids around. But it depends. If you see it with your own eyes, it's very different than hearing it from somebody else. You don't not trust them. You don't distrust, but it's more important for you to see it for yourself. That is way more valuable.
Okay. Rabbi. Is,
yeah.
So I think we learned that the second set of luchos were different than the first, because the first contained the oral and the written law, and the second one only had the written law. So I would think that you would want the people to see both sets. Obviously, I would think that just by looking at it, maybe you could tell the difference. Because then you really understand what you really lost by losing the first set of luchos.
Yeah, there's a medrash. It's this idea that you're suggesting is based on a medrash, based on a Beis Halevi, the original Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, that the medrash writes that the letters came off when Moshe, when the luchos broke, the letters went up to Shemayim, similar to the depiction of the Holocaust memorial that we have in the back of our shul, based on a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which the same thing happened. So the letters that the Beis Halevi suggested felt, went off were was the Torah Shebaal Peh. And maybe there was a point of amuna to teach them there that it really is not two Torahs. It's not, the two Torahs are really one. They're really connected. And you really need both. Yeah, that could be the message over here as well. But I'd like to suggest one other point about why did Moshe break the Luchos? They didn't belong to him. They belonged to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Were they really his to break? Maybe. So the Rashbam writes, they fell out of his hands. He was out of his control. He just couldn't carry them anymore. Rav Tzadok HaKohen Milublin, and Milti, this I think addresses your question as well, which is a very good question, is Rav Tzadok writes a very counterintuitive idea. He writes that what did Hashem want to do at this moment? He wanted to destroy the Jewish people and recreate a nation with Moshe. How is Moshe going to answer God? So the answer he gave him was, Machini Nami Sifrecha. No, I'm going down with them. So Rav Tzadok writes that he did even one greater. It wasn't just that he gave verbal expression, I'm going down with them. But he said, I am a sinner too. You can't just say they're sinners. Look what I did. I broke the Luchos. I'm going down with the team. I broke the Luchos. That is wrong. He purposely did something wrong. He did an Avera. We call it in Torah, in Gemara, we call it an Avera Lishma. He did it to show his fidelity to Am Yisrael and his deep connection to them. And that he's so much connected with them. And he said, my destiny is tied up with your destiny. Where you go, I go. To the extent that he was chote with Klal Yisrael at this moment. So a beautiful insight from Rav Tzadok, which really shows the deep love that Moshe Rabbeinu had for Klal Yisrael. A very, again, counterintuitive, beautiful, beautiful idea over here. Which leads us to our last thought for the morning. And this comes from Rav Hirsch, the beautiful Rav Hirsch. So if I had to ask you, what's the greatest attribute that the Jewish people have? What's the greatest midah that Klal Yisrael have? So let's look at this pasuk. Vayomer. So Moshe now is trying to convince Hashem not to destroy the Jewish people. And you tell me if this sounds like a convincing argument. Vayomer, inna matzati chen beinecha, Adonai. If I have found favor in your eyes, yelech na Adonai bekarbeinu, Hashem, may you again walk in our midst. Ki, why? Why is it? Why do you owe the Jewish people a second chance? Why should you forgive them? Ki, many of us know this pasuk by heart. Ki am keshe orefu. Because they are a stiff-necked, stubborn people. V'salachta lavuneinu ulechataseinu unchaltanu. And because they are a stiff-necked, stubborn people, you shall forgive them of all their sins and their iniquities, and you shall walk again in their midst. Does this to you sound like a convincing argument? Right?
Yes.
The kids in the principal's office. The kids in the office. And he continuously drives people crazy, is failing all of the tests, right? And you turn to the principal as the mom, as the dad, as the advocate, and you say, please, this kid deserves another chance. You know why? Because they're stubborn. They're really stubborn. They're kshe oref. That does not sound like a good argument to me. Mandy, what do you think?
Yeah,
I think yes, because the same quality that's causing them to sin now, throughout time, throughout the ages, they will be stubborn. They will always be on your side, Hashem. They will always support you, and they will carry on forever. But that's that stubbornness.
So, from Mandy to Rav Hirsch, listen to this. It's a beautiful, beautiful Rav Hirsch. That, Rav Hirsch writes, which Moses previously had only a presentiment of its being God's intention, choosing the most stiff-necked people, had now been made absolutely clear to him. just as it was their political weakness and abandoned helplessness, which made Israel the most suitable nation for the revelation of God's power to govern human history, so was it the natural innate absence of the race, which made it the most suitable for the revelation of the divinity of his Torah, by means of which God showed the mightiness of his power of education. Because it is a stiff-necked people, should God wander in their midst. They are the hardest nation. The wonderful educational power of his Torah and of his way, and forgive them again and again, and go on forgiving them. Every pardon presupposes a step towards betterment. Because every step along the way, they are stubborn. They will stick with you forever. This stubbornness, which at certain points does not help Klal Yisrael, is its greatest asset. And this is something which helps us throughout the generations. Rav Hirsch writes, you want to know why we're around forever? Yes, it's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. No question about it. But it's this midah of Am Kishe Oref. We can get knocked down. We can get beaten down. There could be we will always be here. We will always be here. We are that stubborn. Yes, it's true. We are that stubborn.
Rabbi,
yes.
Perhaps part of this same lesson over and over and over of maturity. Kaviyoch, Rabbi Shalom is the father and we are the children, right? So parents allows children to make mistakes. Of course, we're right. Hashem should have known. He could have seen it, yes. But perhaps just what Rabbi says here, we needed to learn how to pay the price, how to get a touch in a way.
That's a great idea. Yeah. And Moshe, I think it's Carl, thank you. I think that's Moshe saying here is that, you know, they're not going to like get patched and then retreat. Right. This is going to make them stronger. This is going to make them greater. The Chovas HaTamidim writes in his essay about parenting and about education, he writes a very similar idea. He says, that child that you are having World War III over at the dinner table about them eating their vegetables, their cucumbers, their Brussels sprouts, whatever it might be, and they are so stubborn and so keep on digging their feet into, no way, no way. That person is going to be the future CEO. That person is going to be very successful, right? This midah of Akshanas, which is very difficult as a parent to raise children like that, right? This is Moshe is the parent. Kadosh Baruch Hu is the parent. The Jewish people are the children. Is going to bode them well in the future, right? And that is so, so significant. And that's what Rav Hirsch is saying here. And that's really Moshe's winning argument to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as to why to keep the people. So that is our fifth and final thought for today. We had number one is, why did Aaron not appoint another leader? As opposed to why collecting money for the golden calf? What is unique about, why did right now you need to tell us about all the special parts of the Luchos? Why did Moshe break the Luchos upon going down the mountain and not at the top? If Hashem told him what was going on, why did Moshe break the Luchos? Two thoughts there. And number five was the stiff-necked people, the greatness of Klal Yisrael, the most important midah that we have is the Akshanus of Klal Yisrael and how that bodes well for us.
Usually we don't
think
of stubbornness as being a positive.
Right.
If I told you I have a shilluch for your daughter, he's a very stubborn guy, you wouldn't think twice. You would say forget about it.
Well, they're stubborn and they're stubborn, right? We have to grow up sometimes from our stubbornness as well.
Right.
For sure. Okay, good Shabbos, everybody. Have a great Shabbos.
Have a great day. Have a good Shabbos.